welcome to Useful Idiots. I'm Katie Halper.
And I'm Mary Mette. How's it going, Katie?
I'm well. You know, viewers may know and listeners may know that Tuesday night I had a live show. Some people came out to it. Some lovers of Useful Idiots came out to it. Now, Aaron, maybe because I said that he'd maybe be there, didn't want people to be able to find him. So Aaron was MIA, but that's okay because another useful idiot represented. And allow me to present to you a photographic piece of evidence from last night's live taping of the Katie Halper Show with Miko Pellet at the People's Forum. And by the way, we're going to do a live taping of Useful Idiots. Just wait and see. But here, Wilson, show this photo, please. Look at that.
So, oh, there's Wilson. Hey.
There's Wilson. Now, is anything, that's a photo of me and Wilson at the People's Forum. Does anything stand out to you?
Wilson, you're a tall man. I mean, I didn't know that.
He's tall. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I had no idea. So I've known Wilson for 2 years now, and I just had no idea he was tall. I just thought he was an average heighted man.
Is it kind of like catching a photo of Bigfoot? Useful Idiots listeners have never actually seen me.
Yeah. And out in the wild, at least. Yeah.
I should make it blurry and be walking in the background.
Yeah. Throw down some snow or something. But yeah, so that was cool. So we missed you, Aaron, but we are grateful to all of those who came out. Yeah, it was a great turnout. And I really recommend Miko's book, The General's Son.
And as always, everybody, if you want to go to usefulidiots.substack.com to support us and sign up and get bonus content, you get our brand new features, including the Thursday Throwdown, your midweek dose of media madness, where this week we're talking about the World War III scare in Poland and also some highlights of Trump's underwhelming election kickoff campaign announcing his candidacy for 2024. You also get to ask us questions in the absurd arena, which we'll turn to right now.
Let's go to the absurd arena. Wilson, what do we got?
So this week, the New York Times posted a story called "For Western Weapons, the Ukraine War is a Beta Test." And Useful Idiot Imperial Rolls asks, "The Ukraine War is a beta test? A beta test for what is the question? WTFF.
Yeah, so this is an article in the New York Times, and we can show the headline. "For Western Weapons, the Ukraine War is a beta test. Though the battle for Ukraine remains largely a grinding artillery war, new advances in technology and training there are being closely monitored for the ways they're starting to shape combat." And what this article basically says is that Ukraine is being basically used as a guinea pig, a testing ground for all these new advanced NATO weapons. And there's even a quote from the New York Times that says this: "The test runs in Ukraine are helping senior officials and defense planners in the U.S. and its allies decide how to invest military spending over the next two decades." So, yes, this war in Ukraine has cost tens of thousands of lives, global suffering, including higher food prices. But on the plus side, it's helping people in the U.S. and other Western allies figure out how they're going to spend taxpayer money on weapons for the next two decades. Kind of like how Israel tests out weapons on the people of Gaza. This is kind of the same thing. So U.S. taxpayer-funded military tests are being spread around from Gaza now to Ukraine.
Is it a beta cuck test?
Yeah, good question. I guess it is. Yeah. So yeah, listen to... that audience member who asked that question, I had the same reaction. That was a weird article. But that just shows how the U.S. views Ukraine, not as an ally, but as a proxy and as a place to test out its weapons.
So glad people have their Ukrainian flags out for that reason. All right. Well, should we get to the four basic food groups?
Yes, let's do it. So there's a lot of fake news these days. And one big international incident came this week when Iran was accused of approving a law to kill 15,000 protesters. And this is one of the original posts that set this off. This is a tweet from Qasem Rashid. And this is what he says: "This is horrifying. The Iranian parliament votes overwhelmingly to execute the 15,000 protesters they already arrested. These were peaceful protesters simply seeking the right to basic justice and autonomy. Unacceptable and barbaric." So that's one of the people spreading the initial claim. And there are other headlines to this effect, including in Newsweek, claiming that Iran has voted to kill 15,000 protesters. And among the people to spread this news was Ted Lieu, who is a Democratic Congress member from California. And this is what he said: The Biden administration should impose immediately all sanctions that are still available on Iran. The U.S. and decent countries around the world need to exert maximum pressure on the Iranian regime now. So that's Ted Lieu, a Democrat, basically endorsing Donald Trump and Mike Pompeo's maximum pressure campaign on Iran, in which the U.S. imposes these crippling sanctions that hurt Iranian civilians, not the regime, because that's the intended target of U.S. sanctions. And on top of, you know, endorsing this barbaric call for cruelty against the Iranian people in the name of protecting them, there's also the problem where this original claim that set all this off was fake. It just wasn't true. And among those who had to acknowledge that was Justin Trudeau, who also tweeted something about this, but then had to delete the tweet when it emerged that the Iranian parliament had not passed a measure calling for the execution of 15,000 prisoners. They had signed a letter, a majority had signed a letter calling for tough punishment of protesters caught rioting, but nobody was calling for their mass execution. So here's the headline from CNN that even Justin Trudeau had to delete a tweet saying this. Canada's Trudeau deletes tweet falsely claiming Iran has sentenced 15,000 protesters to death. And the thing with, you know, advocating sanctions is that when you're doing that in the name of targeting the Iranian government, everyone knows that that's not who gets hurt by sanctions. It's the Iranian people. And the reason these sanctions are designed is to inflict suffering on civilian populations so that either they will turn against their government and help the U.S. overthrow them, or they'll just help teach a lesson to the rest of the world that if you live under a disobedient government like Iran or Venezuela or Syria or Cuba, you're going to face an economic blockade from the U.S. And everyone knows that. And everyone knows the impact on this is on civilians. So here's, for example, what the Wall Street Journal says about the impact of U.S. sanctions on Iran. This is from just last month. U.S. sanctions that target Iran's oil industry and financial sector are the main factor crippling the Iranian economy, cutting the country off from the dollar, most economists agree. So according to the Wall Street Journal, most economists agree that U.S. sanctions are the main factor crippling the Iranian economy. And who do you think gets hurt when an economy is crippled? It's not the people at the top.
The wealthiest, most powerful, right?
Yeah, no, not them. By design, it's ordinary civilians. And so Ted Lieu, for calling for this, calling for an intensification of this, and for falling for, you know, straight up regime change propaganda and not correcting himself, unlike Justin Trudeau, who at least deleted his tweet. I say, Ted Lieu, as a Democrat, you suck.
Yeah. Wow. When you can take a page from Trudeau. Come on, guys, do what Justin did.
And don't do what Donald Trump and Mike Pompeo do.
Which right. That's call true.
For maximum pressure on Iranian civilians.
Right. So it's like a double suckage. It's getting it wrong. And it's a triple suckage, getting it wrong, not correcting it, and also calling for sanctions as if that's better for civilians who you claim to care about.
It's a rare Democrat suck triple axel.
Exactly. I was actually going to say that, but I'm glad you said it.
I stole it from you subconsciously.
Yeah, no, that's great. Maybe I manifested it to you.
You did.
I threw it over to you. Threw the ball into your court.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Well, that definitely is a Democrat suck. For Republican suck, I have a kind of much more straightforward Republican suck, but it still is pretty. It is a gem. Let's listen. Let's hear what Herschel Walker, who's facing, of course, Reverend Raphael Warnock in a runoff in the state of Georgia for the Senate. Let's hear what he had to say.
I can promise you Iran, Russia, and they're not talking about trying to charge a tank out in the desert. They're talking about war. And let me tell you this here. If we was ready for the green agenda, I'd raise my hand right now, but we're not ready right now. So don't let them fool you like this is a new agenda. This is not the new agenda. We're not prepared. We're not ready right now. What we need to do is keep having those gas guzzling cars because we got the good emission under those cars. We're doing the best thing that we can, but we need help. We need help, and those other people not helping us, China not helping us, India not helping us, but yet we're going to do it all because they're spending your money.
So here's what he said. He's on the campaign trail, obviously. And he said, he told his supporters at a rally that America isn't ready for the green agenda. We're not prepared. We're not ready right now. What we need to do is keep having those gas guzzling cars. We got the good emissions under those cars. It's not really clear what he's talking about, but it's an interesting take.
Yeah, always an interesting take from Herschel Walker. What did Dave Chappelle say about Herschel Walker in his stand-up monologue on SNL this past weekend? He said that Herschel Walker is observably stupid.
Yeah.
And yeah, he certainly says a lot of really interesting things.
Really observably stupid things, yeah. And he ties it all together, China, Iran.
That's what unites all politicians, is they can always link everything back to whatever foreign adversary they want.
Right.
And, you know, both parties are great at that. Everything's the fault of China or Russia or China and Russia. And sometimes they throw in Iran too and others. Yeah. But, you know,
sometimes yeah. Venezuela or Cuba.
Sure. Yeah.
Every now and then. Yeah. And so that's my Republican suck.
All right. Well, that's a sucky one. So listen, for isn't that weird? We're going to continue on the Republican suck theme because, you know, we just had the midterm elections where Republicans suffered some major disappointments. They didn't take the Senate. And you can blame that on Trump-backed candidates, like in Pennsylvania and in Arizona, where Blake Masters was the Trump-backed Republican candidate in Arizona. And, you know, I didn't see all these before, but I've caught some of his ads that he put out during the campaign, and they're really weird. So let's check out this one.
America isn't just an idea. We're a country. We're a people with a history and a culture. This is the home of Davy Crockett and Daniel Boone, of Mark Twain and Ernest Hemingway, of Norman Rockwell and Chuck Berry. Or how about... I can hear the screeching already. That list isn't diverse enough. That's all these people can talk about. But when's the last time you heard NPR talk about American greatness? When's the last time you heard a leftist say anything good at all about our people? They don't do it. If it were up to them, we wouldn't even exist. That's why they're obsessed with tearing down statues. I'm Blake Masters. I'm running for the U.S. Senate in Arizona, and I approve this message because I am proud to be an American.
You know, Aaron, I think that's a great ad. The only weird there is that he didn't win. That's what's weird to me. And America didn't choose him.
Why didn't America choose the guy whose token black person was Chuck Berry in his list of white people?
I was going to say, don't sell yourself short on diversity. Chuck Berry brings a lot to the table.
Yeah.
I want to know who the people he bleeped out were.
Well, it's obviously white people. I mean, the whole point is that he's...
Maybe Grand Wizards or something. KKK leaders.
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, the whole point of that is to make fun of people who want diversity and they don't honor our people. I mean, our people is talking about white people, obviously, right? That's the message. But so, yeah, I don't know. That's a weird one. And as you say, what a shocking thing. But let's turn to one more where he talks about the virtues of gun silencers.
This is a Walther PPK. Otherwise known as the James Bond gun. This is chambered in 22LR, and I've got a dead air mask silencer on it. I've wanted this gun for a long time, ever since I was a little kid. Made in Germany, 007 gun. Why would you not want this? Let's load it up and see how it shoots.
Why would you not want it?
Silencers sometimes get a bad rap. People want to pretend that it makes it easy to commit crime or something like that. But actually, shooting with a silencer just makes it a whole lot more pleasant to shoot because you don't have to worry about giant ear protection.
Oh, that's good.
Wow. Hopefully you can hear how quiet that is.
I almost can't hear it. It's so quiet, I can almost not hear it.
So I don't know. Did anybody from the campaign think to themselves, like, okay, we're doing this ad where Blake Masters shooting a gun. How is this going to help him get elected? Who's going to vote for him because he likes this James Bond gun? Like the James Bond audience?
The James Bond Arizona. Audience. German enthusiasts. People who like German products. So much for being America first.
Exactly.
Yeah, where's the American gun?
Yeah, I mean, it's really actually a globalist ad. He's talking about James Bond, which is a British,
right?
A very cosmopolitan British character.
Yeah, seriously.
And then, you know, firing a German gun.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's a traitor. No wonder he's really he didn't win.
This is why he lost. He exposed himself as a globalist, not an America firster.
Right. Yeah.
We caught you, Blake Masters. Sorry.
We gotcha.
Yeah.
Busted by useful idiots. Again, it's so weird that he didn't win.
All right, so what do we have for Isn't That? So what do we have for Isn't That Terrible?
Okay, so for Isn't That Terrible, we have a very terrible story. Although, don't worry, it's not as terrible as it seems. So reading at the New York Post, they have a very moving video. Pig buried for 45 days. Pig buried for 45 days after earthquake in China. That's some pig. A trapped 2-year-old sow in Ludig, China, survived off corn kernels and rainwater for a month and a half following a devastated September 5th earthquake. See how farmers rescued the resilient pig, used a chainsaw to slice into the collapsed bamboo roof, imprisoning the animal. So let's take a look at the video. So there they are with the chainsaw. Let's see what they find. Oh, look at that. Little guy, little gal. She's a sow, so a woman pig. Zhu, a 2-year-old sow, was trapped under a collapsed bamboo roof after a deadly earthquake shook southwest China on September 5th. The pink porker lived off corn scraps and rainwater for 45 days. That's one lucky oinker. And then she's being fed. So it's terrible that she was caught there for 45 days. But within the terrible, it's actually kind of a happy story.
It's a very happy story.
A very happy story, right? She's alive.
This is the best kind of terrible there is.
Yeah, terrible with a happy ending.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's a lot of days to be trapped like that.
45, it's a month and 15 days. Can you imagine a whole month and a half, basically? Just thank God for the kernels.
Thank God.
And rainwater.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, if she had been stuck in another spot, who's to say what kind of food options there would have been?
Yeah, really, she scored.
Oink, oink, babe. As A.C. Slater used to say to Jesse Spano on Saved by the Bell. Yeah.
That's right. Well, they had a weird dynamic, those two.
Yeah, they really did. I identified with her, though, because I was a big feminist.
Really? She was. That's right. She was
very political. She felt bad about coming from slave owning stock.
That's right. And she apologized traders. To Lisa Turtle. Yeah.
She apologized to Lisa Turtle, whose ancestors were part of the Underground Railroad. And Jesse revealed that her family were slave owners and traders. And then she apologized to Lisa and offered to to shovel her snow, which is kind of a nice way of enacting reparations.
And that episode is where millions of young American teens learned about the history of slavery in this country and racial injustice.
Not only that, they learned about Native American history because Zach
was
a Native American. I don't know if he was a relative or just became a mentor, but
Zach Morris, like blonde haired Aryan Zach Morris, found out that he had Native American ancestry. He met with a Native man who told him about his ancestors.
Right. And then he tragically, spoiler alert, died.
Right. Okay, don't ruin it. Don't ruin it for
people. All right, we can bleep that out. Just bleep it out, yeah. I'll just say it's good. Let's just say it's a good thing he met him when he did.
Yes, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah, yeah. And he had a headdress on. It was I'm sure that they consulted with a lot of the elders for that episode.
By the way, did you see a few years ago, Jimmy Fallon did a reunion on his show with most of the cast members, except for Dustin Diamond, who played Screech.
Who died of cancer, right?
Who recently passed away, but it's actually a really funny reboot.
Oh, cool.
Watch it. It's really, really funny. Like everyone's in it except for Screech. And it was great. It's really funny.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, watch it. Yeah. I love Saved by the Bell.
Me too. As you
a
might
lot
be
of
able
great
to tell.
Lessons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Belding.
Hey, we can do a whole episode. Okay. Let's try to get on one of the cast members. We can do a Saved by the Bell episode. Yeah. All right. Well, on a different note, we're going to turn now to our guest. Kit Clarenberg is a journalist for The Gray Zone. He runs a Gray Zone UK section, and he's had a lot of material to work with recently, including many leaks that show a deep British government role in the Ukraine proxy war. And we're going to talk to him about that and many other interesting topics. All right, let's go to Kit Clarenberg. Kit Clarenberg, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
A lot to talk to you about. Let's start with the controversy over FTX, this multi-billion dollar crypto company collapsing after, you know, major financial malfeasance is exposed. And there's been a lot of talk about FTX's ties to Ukraine and allegations of using Ukraine for laundering. You looked into this for a brand new piece in The Gray Zone. What did you find?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing to say is that you know, people are charging off in a number of directions related to FTX's relationship with the government of Ukraine. The evidence, far beyond the evidence. I think that's really unhelpful because it's allowing, you know, detractors and war propagandists to kill this story at the gate. And it is, you know, it is significant. There is major cause for concern. There are serious questions to be asked. So essentially, in March, it was announced, March 14th, it was announced that the government of Ukraine, specifically its digital transformation department, which played a pivotal role in getting the Gray Zone disinvited from the Web Summit in Lisbon, as I think you found your cast, my dear friend. But like, right. essentially, this it was a platform whereby crypto donators could provide funds to the government of Ukraine. They would go to FTX, that would convert it into fiat currency, i.e. cash, and it would be sent to the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense. This was on March 14th. Now, on April 1st, this website that was set up specifically to attract donations, it was called Aid for Ukraine. It was part of the Ukrainian government's official website. That it stated on the 1st of April that it had received 70 million in donations. Now, 5 days later, on April 6th, this is revised down to 60 million. That's already, if the initial figure was sincere, that's 10 million that's just gone missing, you know, bizarrely. But then, yeah, so it, effectively, this was to raise money for you know, weaponry and fuel and rations and radios, equipment and all, you know, all the kind of mod cons you would require to, you know, fight a war one way or another. You know, after this initial fanfare, it kind of goes quiet for a bit, but you know, the website still remains extant and, you know, seemingly accepting donations. On October 26th, the web page is deleted, and then it, for no apparent reason, it's then replaced by a standalone website which still has the Ukrainian government's imprimatur, and then it mimics what was deleted. So it states that over 60 million was raised, and it has a list of different cryptocurrencies you can donate in, and, you know, details of how you can do this. I mean, why this happened at that point isn't clear, and this is particularly suspicious, or at least questionable, because there are numerous statements in the public domain from Bitcoin bros and Ukrainian government officials who were involved in this initiative, where they state that only 60 million was raised, and they refer to how FTX only played a role in March in terms of converting Bitcoin donations into currency, physical currency. So what was this site doing between the end of March, when all of this money was allegedly made, and November, when this new site is created? That's not clear. And yeah, that's something to be investigated. And yes, there are questions to be answered. I mean, entirely aside from the question of why the initial donation total was revised down from 70 million to 60 million, it seems, or at least it's claimed on both the webpage and the new standalone website that this was put towards, yes, all of these different resources, including one of the biggest single ticket items was $5.5 million that was spent on a anti-war media campaign. I mean, you know, again, quite what why Kiev would need such a large pot of money when the Western media is doing that job for them itself isn't clear.
And just to explain something you referenced where the Gray Zone got canceled, Max Blumenthal and I were invited to this conference called Web Summit in Lisbon, a big tech media conference. And then the Ukrainian government, including the minister you mentioned, and also the office of the first lady, so the president's office, basically, pressured them to cancel us. And so we got canceled, and that was too bad. But anyway, and overall, just, you know, for people to understand what happened with FTX, as I understand it, they took their client's money, invested it in another firm that they owned and lost a lot of money there, and then now don't have the reserves to cover their losses. Is that basically what happened?
Yeah, in effect. So it seems, and this is, I mean, it's interesting that the Ukraine angle hasn't appeared despite the kind of minute by minute granular coverage of FTX's collapse in the mainstream media. So in effect, it seems that like FTX was, or at least Sam Bankman-Fried, its rather young founder, was skimming money out of FTX via a bespokely created backdoor, which meant that he could take this money out without it being detected by auditors or it showing up on his balance sheet. And so when it was reported that FTX had a very close relationship with Alameda Research, which is another company founded by Bankman-Fried, which is this online asset trading platform, which doesn't seem to have done very well since he created it, this created a run, i.e. a mass withdrawal of customer funds from the platform. They didn't have the underlying assets to redeem those withdrawals, so then the value of its underlying cryptocurrency FTT crashed. And yes, it was a kind of a Lehman Brothers moment where, you know, this large business, one of the largest cryptocurrency exchanges in the world, didn't actually have the money it claimed on its balance sheet. Where it's gone is a mystery, and no one knows.
And then you have the fact that FTX and its founder Sam Bankman-Fried, that's his name, SBF, were giving millions of dollars to the Democratic Party. It was like a top Democratic Party donor.
Yeah, I mean, this is, again, it's a kind of a Rosetta Stone here. So Bankman-Fried, his mother, who is like this Harvard academic, in 2018, kind of midway through 2018, she creates a super PAC, a super BAC, which is to raise money for Democratic candidates. And they use, supposedly high-tech analytics to identify people running in less obvious marginal seats where, you know, extra dollars would make, you know, a big difference. And so, you know, they had that's launched. They seem to get a lot of money from Silicon Valley investors. Samuel himself, in early 2019, in April, which is, you know, right when Biden announces his presidential campaign, could be a coincidence, could be not, launches FTX and then immediately starts funneling money to Democratic causes. And, you know, he has no background in political donations. He has no background in political activism at all. And this is, you know, regarded in the media as this amazing transformation. Fast forward to October of this year. And, you know, by this point, he's become the Democrats' second biggest donor, giving them tens of millions of dollars. And, you know, even suggesting in June, after a series of high-level meetings with White House advisors, that he's going to give up to $1 billion to ensure the Democrats win the 2024 presidential election. In mid-October, he reverse ferrets. He changes his mind completely, and he not only says that the $1 billion pledge was dumb, and it was him being inconsistent with messaging, but he also says that he's going to stop political donations altogether. This is very odd. It doesn't really make sense. And then, you know, it's only a few days after that where it's announced that the Texan financial authorities are going to start investigating FTX for potentially illegal activity in terms of what they're selling. You know, maybe he saw something coming which other people didn't know at the time.
And this thing about the deleted webpage for aid for Ukraine, is that significant? I mean, as you write about, a identical page was created right afterwards. The fact that the original aid for Ukraine crypto page was deleted, does that indicate something?
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, you know, and I mentioned just now, like the Texan financial authorities announced on October 21st that they're going to start probing more deeply what's been going on at FTX. It's 5 days after that that Aid for Ukraine, as a web page within the Ukrainian government's official website, is closed down. It's deleted. All the records are purged. And in its place is a standalone website that's is established, which is almost identical. That's on November 1st. Now, you know, why would this happen? Particularly if, you know, according to Ukrainian government officials and crypto experts who are involved in this, that it hasn't been receiving donations since March. Like, you know, why would you suddenly create a new website if it's not operational and you're not using FTX services? Were the Ukrainians told something? Was this actually always intended, FTX, intended as a money laundering scheme to funnel money towards democratic campaigns? If that's the case, the announcement of a official investigation into its activities, which generated very little press coverage, would have set off alarm bells in Washington and Kyiv. Maybe it was felt, well, we need to start a new organization which, you know, and therefore, you know, destroy the records associated with his previous incarnation. Again, it's not clear, but there's something afoot.
How did you start looking into this, by the way?
I mean, as I say, you know, the FTX scandal has been covered, you know, minute by minute. And, you know, I saw some people posting on social media about how I had connections to Ukraine. I started delving into that. And then, you know, because I'm very sad and live on my own, I spent a lot of time going over internet archives of the original site. Every single pathway I went down just raised further questions. It gave further cause for concern. It just doesn't make sense. And it's like, yes, you know, this resource, which allegedly only operated up to April, but then has been open to donations the whole time with cryptocurrency, the cryptocurrency community, quote unquote, being encouraged to donate. But then we don't know how much has actually been donated. And there's also this issue as well where, yes, like Sam Bankman-Fried allegedly used his backdoor to move around money without anyone noticing. The first kind of point of call in the blockchain between crypto donations and the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense was FTX. What were funds reaching there and then being, you know, hoovered up and moved elsewhere for other purposes? That's not clear. The question needs to be asked and answers need to be given.
I mean, look, it's a kind of thing where, as you say, people could be drawing too much from this, that it's not as sinister as it may appear. But I mean, fundamentally, though, we know that FTX is shady. That's been confirmed. We also know that Ukraine has been a hub of money laundering and corruption for a long time, even well before this war broke out. So I think it's totally fair at least to be asking questions about what was going on here, given already FTX's role in documented fraud.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like, you know, the Ukrainian government, there have been numerous reports recently, even in the mainstream, about how, I mean, CBS published a documentary that was that exposed how only 30% of the weapons that are, you know, this kind of, you know, ever voluminous, you know, multi-billion per week weapon shipments from Western countries, mainly the US, is actually reaching the front line. And then due to backlash, they retracted and they, offered an amendment which said that, like, oh, well, actually now controls are tighter. There are US military officials officials in Ukraine now who are in, you know, ostensibly ensuring that everything reaches the front line. I mean, quite how they would be able to offer that certainty isn't clear, whether they have, you know, other agendas in, you know, in their presence there. You know, that's, you know, likewise far from clear. But it's it has been confirmed that, you know, that, you know, that weaponry and other you know, humanitarian aid, quote unquote, that's been sent to Ukraine has been sold on the black market. Among the buyers are the Russian military, you know, in some cases with this, you know, high tech missile equipment being sold. So yeah, I mean, there is a very clear need to ask questions about to what purposes this money was put. You know, was an eye being kept on how much money was donated via aid for Ukraine? Would the Ukrainian government itself have any idea the true sums involved and whether FTX was being open and honest with them about how much it was sending on? But this is completely absent from mainstream media coverage completely.
Well, you have another piece, leaked documents, British spies constructing secret terror army in Ukraine. Tell us about what you found during this investigation.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, this is an extension of an earlier article which covered how Britain mapped out, you know, high-level British intelligence officers mapped out the destruction of Kerch Bridge in April, i.e. many months before it actually happened. But, like, I mean, I see this as kind of interrelated to questions of Ukrainian corruption, because these individuals, I mean, which includes, you know, former high-ranking MI6, Britain's Foreign Intelligence Service, operatives and members of, you know, elite British military intelligence units like Special Secret Military Intelligence. It does what it says on the label. You know, they are involved in what is essentially this kind of orgiastic grift, like where, like, you know, they are seeking to profit from the war however they can. I mean, you know, there are war profiteers and there are war crimes profiteers. And so they put together back in April a wide-ranging plan of sabotage and, you know, kind of incendiary, you know, terrorist act in and around Crimea. We have seen some of these play out, like, you know, the destruction of the Kerch Bridge, attack on Russian shipping in the Black Sea, other incursions, you know, of that manner, which have occurred in the past few weeks. Now, these individuals, when they talk privately, thinking that no one's going to see what they say because they use Proton Mail, they always talk about their need to be properly remunerated for what it is they're doing and how much money is sloshing around in the private space, and will Uncle Sam pay for this, etc. You know, I mean, they just want to line their own pockets while Ukrainians are being killed. Extremely unsavory characters, to say the least. But yes, I mean, my most recent article for Grey Zone delves into how this kind of transnational criminal intelligence network, you know, for want of a better phrase, they are building a secret partisan terror army in Ukraine. This is run out of the Odessa SBU, that's the security service of Ukraine. It's Odessa offices, and they are providing bespoke training to, yes, what they call a partisan army, who is going to live in and amongst people and arrange and execute all manner of kind of a murderous skullduggery. And, you know, and yes, the assumption, I think, from the papers was that Ukrainians aren't, the formal Ukrainian army would be finished by this point. That, like, I mean, there's a sit rep that's written up by this representative of an organization called Prevail Partners.
And sit rep means?
A situational report. Yeah, sorry. But they're like, you know, it's written up by this company called Prevail Partners that are all, you know, high-ranking special UK Special Forces, Royal Marines, and they effectively talk about how, you know, a lot of untrained men aged from 18 to, you know, the early 60s, I think, are being sent to the front line with the, you know, pretty much 100% certainty that most of them won't be coming back ever. And will be killed very, very quickly. And so this partisan army would allow, theoretically, Ukraine to carry on prosecuting its proxy war through the medium of, tiny secret cells, which, operate clandestinely by night, and they carry out sabotage, disrupting, Russian war logistics. It's fantasy, really. I think this is, a bunch of people who probably never fought in wars, or at least in wars like this before, with a direct competitor, living out their fantasies. It's really quite disturbing.
And these leaks you got, these are the emails of some of these contractors, and they include people who have worked for British military intelligence. Talk to us about, what these leaks are, and, we should say, we don't know where they came from, right? So these could have been hacked emails for all we know, but they've been authenticated. In fact, Max Blumenthal called one of the people involved who was involved in a plot to blow up the Kerch Bridge, which Ukraine recently attacked. And what you obtained was these blueprints for how that attack could be played out, which we'll talk about shortly. But the point is, at least one of the participants has confirmed the authenticity of these emails that you were leaked.
Yes, I mean this is a really quite extraordinary call, the individual who mapped this all out, and he called it audacious plans for targeting Kerch Bridge, ums and ahs and stutters and stammers, and says that he can't quite confirm their authenticity until he speaks to Chris Donnelly, which is the former NATO advisor and, yes, like high-ranking British military intelligence official who commissioned this, in other words, confirming that he did produce this, to say nothing of the metadata naming him solely as the author of these blueprints. But yeah, I mean, yes, we don't know where they came from. We can confirm their authenticity through various means. We have done. And yeah, I mean, again, it's just this kind of all these people who are so far away from the front line and are not going to be, I mean, apart from maybe economically due to sanctions, affected by the war at all, who are throwing Ukrainians into harm's way with all of, all of these, rather crazy proposals to take out Russian shipping, to sabotage Russian shipbuilding and ship repair facilities, to carry out intelligence operations, recruiting people who work at these facilities. I mean, the bombing of Kerch Bridge, it seems that plan had numerous different underlying operational exactitudes, in the sense that it shifted from what Hugh Ward proposed, Hugh Ward being the individual, the British Army veteran who was stung by Max quite so epically. He proposed blowing up the pillars of Kerch Bridge. Now, the commemorative postage stamp of the actual Kerch bombing shows pretty much what he proposed. So, I mean, it was given that it was issued within hours of this happening, it was clearly prepared in advance. Now, they then moved on to a separate plan, which was again hatched by Prevail Partners, whereby a ship full of ammonium nitrate would be detonated under Kerch Bridge. And they approvingly cited the Beirut port blast, which caused mass environmental destruction, killed a large number of people, as a model to follow. In its stead, they seem to have settled on employing a truck driver to ferry ammonium nitrate to the bridge and then detonating it remotely without the truck driver themselves knowing. This is a long-standing British intelligence tactic that was used in their Northern Irish Dirty War, where they would strap people in cars and then under coercion force them to drive into British military checkpoints, killing civilians and military officers alike, and then therefore justifying brutal crackdowns on the province's Catholic population.
Sounds to me like a proxy war. British operatives are drawing up these detailed plans to commit attacks inside of Ukraine against civilian infrastructure in a bid to actually escalate the war. It sounds to me like this is a proxy war.
Indeed. And it's like, and I think that's one of the things that's very clear from the leaked emails that Grayson received, is that there is apparently, at least initially after the war broke out on February 24th, there was an initial reluctance to hire private sector actors for training purposes, perhaps because it would be easier for them to be exposed, perhaps because it was feared that they would, you know, go beyond acceptable boundaries in terms of what they were doing. I mean, yeah, that the, and you can see why it was necessary to keep this a secret, because if, you know, it being open and overt about this, I mean, Britain would have no recourse to the allegation that it is a, you know, an active belligerent in this war, because it is mapping out and, you know, potentially carrying out specific dedicated operations on behalf of Kiev. And, you know, therefore, it becomes, you know, an active participant rather than simply providing support.
And, you know, the tragedy of plots like this is that these UK operatives who helped design plans to blow up a civilian bridge in Ukraine, as you say, they don't bear the consequences. So after Ukraine did ultimately attack the Kerch Bridge, and operationally, as you report, the way it occurred was different than how these UK operatives had planned it. But the fact that UK operatives were planned it shows the international role in plotting attacks like this. But then what happened afterwards? Russia responded with its worst barrage of missiles to date, hitting civilian infrastructure inside of Ukraine. And so it's Ukrainian civilians who ultimately pay the price of, you know, plots that are formulated elsewhere.
And to hear the rest of the interview, please go to usefulidiots.substack.com. What an informative interview. What a scoop.
Kit is a very informative guy, has gotten a lot of amazing scoops at the Gray Zone that, you know, I'm biased, obviously, but I think should have gotten way more attention. But the reason they were ignored is because they're so damning. Like, it's not good to find out from the point of view of someone who supports a proxy war in Ukraine that British operatives are heavily involved in plotting attacks and plotting to organize insurgents. So better to ignore that kind of stuff.
And a great way to do that is you just smear the outlet.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey.
Then no one even has to look at it.
And cancel us from speaking.
It is really amazing how people just won't engage in the content. It's just a character attack on you or Max or on the Gray Zone.
You know, the Gray Zone, I've always thought the name sounds a little bit, it sounds a little bit spooky. It sounds like, you know, it's like maybe the name doesn't help us, but
yeah, you gotta call it black or white.
but yeah, no, of course, that's all they can do with us is just do character assassinations and try to get us canceled. And, it, you know, look, they've had some success, but anybody who's intellectually serious will look past all that and just focus on the content, whether the content is factual or not, because that's what journalism is basically about.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks everyone for watching. Make sure you join our Substack at usefulidiots.substack.com, where we'll bring you our Thursday throwdown. Also an extended interview with Kit, which you'll love. And also Aaron's going to talk a little bit about getting canceled from a conference in Lisbon.
Every week, another cancellation story. It never ends. So yes, happy to talk about that.
Subscribe at youtube.com/usefulidiots. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast and rate and review us.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Thanks. Bye. Hello. Thank you so much for listening to and watching Useful Idiots. For full episodes and extended interviews, please subscribe at usefulidiots.substack.com. You can subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/usefulidiots for clips, live streams, and full episodes. Also, subscribe to us wherever you find your podcast. Follow us on Twitter at usefulidiotpod and use the hashtag usefulidiotspod. Join us Mondays at 10 a.m. for the Useful Idiots Monday Morning Show, where we discuss the Sunday morning news shows so you don't have to watch them.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.